There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, CEO and founder, and I am honoured to bring you the stories of those who create change through paying it forward and giving back. Ethical business owners and holistic healers who are determined to create collective change in the world. Once we have a change in consciousness and through collective change, we can become one. My next guest is Nate Rifkin, an author who, on his quest to be an entrepreneur, spiraled into debt, drinking, depression, loneliness, and self-loathing. After a brutal bankruptcy and doing all he could to crawl out of the hole that he'd created, the spiritual practice of Taoism and daily standing meditation turned his entire life around. Once Nate had achieved that inner balance and peace, all the other aspects of his life started to fall into place. I truly love this honest, open, connected space with Nate, and I hope you do too. Welcome, Nate, to The Ethical Evolution.
Well, thank you, Bindi. I'm honored to be here.
I am so excited to have you here. Now, we are so lucky to have a mutual friend, Reverend Cherie, who's actually brought you my way, which is so beautiful. But for those people who don't know who you are, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Certainly, certainly. Well, I'm a writer and I love writing, and I'm someone who just went through a pretty painful journey where I actually went through a bankruptcy. I used to be in a tremendous amount of debt, and I used to be extremely depressed. I drank alcohol every morning, and I actually managed to turn all of that around by kind of going on my own spiritual walk. So now I'm writing about it and talking about it. And that's why I was so happy that you invited me on for a conversation.
Yeah. And it's incredible, you know, what you've been through and how you've come through it. I myself have been through very similar synergies, also been through bankruptcy, all those kind of things. So, you know, depression, the whole nine yards. What was the breaking point for you?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. It was kind of like it was a slow chipping and breaking, and then it all just went really fast. So, you know, honestly, for me, it was how when I was in my early 20s, I was really into self-help. And I was the perfect like self-help prospect because I believed everything. So I'd consume, you know, books and courses on goal setting and visualization. And I spent all my money on that kind of stuff because my mindset was I'm investing in my education, which which could be a very healthy mindset. But I was kind of like skewing it in really the wrong direction because I was going into credit card debt for it. And I was just believing anything I could get my hands on. So my breaking point was when I looked back over the past couple of years and I realized I never achieved a single goal I set for myself. And I was almost to the limit in terms of credit card debt. It was that feeling of not just like failure, but it was almost like a sense of betrayal because it's like, wait a minute, I actually worked hard. I actually put in the effort and the time. So I'm like, wait a minute, it's not just, this isn't me. I mean, I might've gone wrong somewhere, but it's like, I really tried. So that was my breaking point. And that's when I started drinking because I'm just like, yeah, I must be cursed. Nothing must work. That was where I arrived for a long time.
Yeah. And there's also a shame that goes with it. Would you agree? Like when you find yourself in that space and it's not a place anyone wants to be in, but there's a lesson in it. But when you're in it, when you're deep in it, there's this shame that you feel that you don't want anyone to know that you've failed so royally.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, because the, what happened with me, and I did feel that shame, was I kept quiet about it. I kept quiet about what I was going through, because I didn't want to appear unsuccessful to like fellow business owners or just to other people. And I just, looking back, I'm realizing now, it's like, if I were more honest about where I was at, that actually could have led to better connections with other people. Because, you know, I realized the right people, both others who are in the same position are struggling, and others who have actually gotten beyond that and are in a really good space, they want to hear the honest truth. And they're actually, the right people will be on your side and encourage you. And I was just like, I didn't get that. So yeah, I know, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, it's like, if we could just like take that shame and put it through a paper shredder for other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's something I talk about a lot on this show, is shame and what it actually does to us, and and how it impacts our outcomes and our relationships and everything, you know. So and how that's changed in recent decades. Like, if someone was to go through that experience now, it'd be completely different to what it was, say, 20 years ago. And people are more open and honest about those kind of things, and they do seek help, and they do, you know, turn it around a lot quicker than we used to.
And I'm glad that is. And I think it's because we're having conversations like this. So anything more we could do is sort of like continue that trend where people are just more open about this thing, I think the better. Because those are the kinds of stories that are actually the most helpful. I mean, we connect through struggle. And the stories that inspired me the most when I was, kind of on my way up and building my career, were stories where someone struggled. Straight up.
Yeah. And that's it. You know, the people who are successful or overcoming struggle of some sort, they're the people we can learn the most from and not make those mistakes over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree, because the best teachers are the ones who went through everything. If they didn't go through something, they don't have the direct experience, and that can make teaching a bit more difficult. I think one of the key phrases, I think, for leadership is being able to say, I've been there.
Absolutely.
I've been there.
Yeah. So the drinking every morning, mate, like, how on earth did you get there?
The short version is, when I decided, I always had a dream of becoming a business owner, an entrepreneur of some sort. I didn't know what, but I had it, you know, in my blood, you could say. So when I went to college, and I was, by the way, a really socially awkward kid. I grew up in a pretty emotionally shut down family, and I just became a really awkward, depressed kid. I was angry at first, and a lot of that anger turned inward, and I got really depressed. So when I went to college, it actually got worse, because I thought I was going to start over again, and it would be, you know, around new people. But, you know, I went to UMass Amherst. It's this massive college in Massachusetts in the U.S., and it's like huge campus, like 18,000 students on campus. It's the size of a town. And I'm like walking around amidst a sea of strangers in this, it's a beautiful campus. It's just really big, rolling green hills. And I realized I was so wrong about thinking I could start over again, because I was still carrying the same self-sabotage and the same like really crippling shyness and awkwardness with me. So my one kind of hope was that, okay, well, I still want to be a business owner of some sort. And then as I started like going to classes, and my grades were awful because I didn't care, I started wondering, should I really stick around for 4 years? Is anyone really going to care if I have a degree or not? And I thought, no. And coupled with that, by the way, was I was very impatient. I didn't value the time of really learning something in depth. Which would kind of bite me later as a business owner or a would-be business owner. So I dropped out, and I moved to Colorado, and I was alone. I started a company. It was a small startup where I decided I would partner with my older brother. He was super into yoga and he was really good at it. Mm. So I'm like, we made a deal where he would make products and I'd help him with that. And we'd sell them online and I would handle all the business side of the things, the marketing, the advertising, everything. And I had absolutely no like knowledge of business fundamentals. Like I had a talent for writing. And we had some hit or miss success with advertising, but I was using my own credit to, fund the business. And I was going deeper and deeper into debt, which is very scary. And I put myself into this desperate position where I was like, everything was like, I gotta like sell a bit more products like right now so that I can get a little bit of money in the bank so I could pay off my rent or so I could pay off a little bit of this credit card. So I entered this cycle of desperation, which really shut down like my long-term thinking, my creativity. So all my thinking was skewed by that, like, okay, I gotta scrounge together something right now. Coupled with that was the fact that I was still this like depressed, lonely person. Mm. So I was scared and I was really depressed and all the self-help stuff wasn't working out for me. That's how I started getting so fed up and so like self-loathing that I started drinking because I was like, I need this buzz to get through the day. Mm. Every morning I wake up, it's just like, I need that buzz. And I deluded myself into thinking I could still function like at 100% in doing so. So I'd pour myself like a couple of shots of vodka or something like that. I don't know how much, but it was triple distilled vodka. I could recognize the bottle today.
Oh, wow.
It was a glass bottle. And I'd pour in an equal amount of some kind of energy drink.
Wow.
That was my breakfast.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, what you just mentioned there, I mean, when you're going through that cycle of fear, you just become paralyzed and there's no way to move forward when you're in that state. So how did you break the cycle?
Something very fortunate happened to me. So I had, a mentor in business at the time and he had, a spiritual side to him. So he actually started teaching, some of the more like esoteric forms of like meditation that he learned from a spiritual tradition called Taoism. Mm. So Taoism, it's all over the world, but really it's mostly centered in China. And it's a really fascinating spiritual tradition. It goes back thousands of years. I had no idea about Taoism, but the idea is to seek harmony through balance. And there's a philosophical side to Taoism. And most people have actually heard of a lot of Taoist philosophy, even if they don't know it. Like the idea of, or even the quote, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. That's actually a Taoist quote from the book, The Tao Te Ching.
Mm.
So what I didn't know is that there's actually a practical side to the philosophy, and all spiritual traditions have a practical side to it where they have like step-by-step meditations to really embody the philosophy of the tradition. So I started learning about Taoist meditation. And when I first heard about it, I was just like, I was hearing all this info about like practitioners of it who would meditate in caves or, you know, they'd become enlightened and become all sensitive to like energy. And I was like, sounds cool. It sounds like secret. It sounds like really exotic. And that appealed to my ego, which is super important because at that stage I was in, like I was still really arrogant. And I needed something like that to catch my attention. And that's what I found actually is a kind of a truism amongst a lot of people is that no one pays attention to the guru in their own backyard, even if there's value there. They need to go on that journey where they like a journey of 1,000 miles in order to truly value the information that they're getting. So I started doing a meditation and it was done standing up. And I started with just a minute a day, but I decided it's like, all right, let me try this out. And it sounds really cool. and I'm just going to do a minute a day, and I'm going to add time every day. And a funny thing started to happen. I start to like feel pretty good from doing this meditation. And I felt so good that eventually, by the way, I was still drinking every morning. So I do the meditation, then I go drink.
Oh, well.
I was nothing if not practical. So I was just like, at least I chose to meditate first. But I didn't stop. I mean, so I go and I go drink. But I noticed something is like, wait a minute, the buzz I'm feeling from this meditation is kind of like catching up to the buzz I feel from the alcohol. And I'm like, this is really interesting. So after a few weeks, the buzz I got from meditating was actually at the same level of the buzz from alcohol. And I just got more like drunk and disoriented after I drank the alcohol. So I thought, what's going to happen? Is this going to continue? So what was going on was that I started feeling better and better from meditating, but the alcohol was just bringing me to the same level. Mm. Now before, that level was way better than I used to be because I was so depressed and hated myself. But after a couple days after the feeling was the same from meditating and drinking, meditation actually made me feel a little bit better. So what happened when I took a drink of alcohol in the morning? I actually felt a little bit worse. Because it was dragging me back down to that same level that used to be so, by comparison, felt so good.
Mm.
Now, this is just my own story. This is just what happened to me. I stopped actually drinking that vodka energy drink combo in the morning, cold turkey. Mm. And it wasn't willpower. It made me feel worse. So I stopped. And from then on, I was like, you know, this is like the only thing that's really working out for me. It's like, other than the effort I have to put in, it's all upside and no downside. So I devoted myself to it. I'm like, I'm going to study this as much as I can. I'm going to practice this as much as I can. And that's how I started to like inwardly turn my life around. Now, I still had a lot of, you know, stuff I had to go through from there, getting my financial life together. But inwardly, that's how I started to turn around.
And really, when you can get that inner balance, like you say, all the other things start to fall into place, don't they?
Yeah, I found that's true. It took longer than I wanted. It was tougher than I wanted. But absolutely, you know, it's a licensed inside job. So once I stopped grasping outside of myself and striving forward for some vision of success and actually started working on myself inwardly, that's when I developed the awareness that allowed me to see what a successful life was and a fulfilling life was truly going to be for me. And I think that's true for everyone.
Mm.
You know, we in order to pick the dream that's really attainable for us and that's going to fulfill us, and I think those go hand in hand, we need that clarity and awareness, and that's only going to come when we start working ourselves inwardly, so we can really just quiet down that ego and instead find out what the you know, the more deeper, wiser, more eternal part of us actually wants.
Yeah, and you're so right. It is an inner job, and you know, a lot of people think, oh yeah, you know, I've done my healing, or I've done my meditation, I've done my yoga, I'm all good. But it's an eternal thing. It's a constant evolution. It never ends because we as humans are constantly evolving.
Yeah, and actually, I love the way you put that. That it's because we are constantly evolving. So it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. Mm. You know, it's just like, I like to think of it almost as brushing one's teeth or taking a shower or something like that. It's not like something where it's like, oh yeah, I went through that phase. I did that. or eating a meal or drinking water. This is something that is part of sustaining our existence and thriving as a human being. And it's not like it could be whatever spiritual path resonates with us, or whatever path or whatever practice resonates with us. There's plenty to choose from, and I think everyone has one in particular that's going to be great for them. But it has to be something. Mm. It has to be something.
Yeah, and I love how you put that, you know, like brushing your teeth every day. I quite often when I'm with clients, I'll say, you know, it's just like, you know, maintaining a car and it has all the different systems. You know, you need to look at your health, your spirituality and your mental health. Like there's all these parts that make up you as who you are. And one of those is that spiritual side of you and contributing to that growth supports all the others.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh, that's perfect. And, you know, the people who need to hear that the most are the ones who might resist that the most, because it's sort of like, I'll just talk from my experience. Back when I was at my lowest point, the idea to work on the spiritual side was something that I would run screaming from because I needed I need practical solutions for right now that work. But what I didn't realize is that it's sort of like the equivalent of like when you're super hungry, you want to grab a piece of candy or something like that, which it's what your brain wants because it's going to feel good in that moment, but it's not what's going to actually make you thrive long term. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I say that in case it's helpful, but you know, it's still really difficult. You know, I think that's true universally. There's a big part of us that consciously resists that, which is what we what is the next step for our growth.
Yeah. And that's where I think we as humans, we get in the way. You know, we're too obsessed of, you know, how we're going to get somewhere, that we don't just trust in the fact that as long as we focus on where we need to be, all of the pieces will fall into place. And get out of the way and start worrying about the how. It'll all fall in place.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Now, tell us about your writing based on your experience.
Oh, sure. You know, it's interesting. So everything I mentioned in terms of like my low point, that was about 13 years ago, around about 13 years ago. I mean, it was over a period of time, but that was in general how long ago it was. And ever since then, after I kind of climbed out of that emotional pit, you could say, I always thought about, you know, how crucial it was to develop like an inner practice. And for me, it was Taoism that resonated with me. And ever since then, I've been kind of like looking around and like kind of thinking to myself, not a lot of people know about it. So I decided actually 3 years ago to write a book about it. And I wrote about, you know, I framed it as here's what happened to me. And here's the lessons I learned. And here's how, you know, someone could apply them to their own life. Here's how to sort of like, let me unfold the lessons and how to like make them practical steps. Because I realized that I went on this kind of spiritual path and I learned the hard way how to integrate it into one's day-to-day life. I mean, just as an example, after I started like turning myself around, like you could say emotionally and spiritually, I still had a tremendous amount of debt. And I realized that I need to get a day job just to support myself and work on my business and have a day job. And I realized I can't even pay the minimums on my debt. So I'm going to have to file for bankruptcy. And I did. I treated it as I joked that was my financial baptism. It's sort of like I got to wash and start over.
Yeah.
So it was lessons like that on how, like, by going on a spiritual path first, when I encountered challenges, I was able to sort of see them from the perspective of an observer and also not use them as weapons to beat myself with. Instead of just hearing like, oh yeah, treat everything like a learning experience, I was actually able to embody that. So I wrote the book to show how it's like how to integrate a spiritual practice in your daily life, how to turn that into a habit that you actually use to nourish yourself. And then as a result, you're still you and you're still walking through the same outer world, but you're able to respond differently to it rather than reacting to and getting knocked over by the stuff that that hits you day to day.
Yeah, and it's so funny that you just mentioned that, because I was just reading this morning about detachment and you know, going through situations where you're the observer and not you know, you react differently. So you're actually, you know, choosing a courageous reaction instead of being so immersed in it that you just lose all, you know, context. So that detachment really does help you to get through difficult situations or even just daily challenges, you know, and your reactions to them. And the stress that you let go of and all the other emotions that you hold on to as part of that attachment, they're just all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's brilliant. And I think a lot of people hear about something like detachment and they're like, wait a minute, what does that mean? Because it's really easy to think, oh, detachment, does that mean I don't care? No. Or does that mean I just kind of like put on, yeah, exactly. No, of course not. Or I put on this, like, what is this emotional neutrality? And a lot of people might interpret that as like shutting down the emotions, which is really just stuffing them down. But what it's about is understanding that you have an eternal soul, everyone does. So the detachment it means a lot of things, but to me, what's coming up for me right now is it means you are seeing things from the proper perspective. Mm. You're seeing something from a perspective of the event is temporary. Mm. My feelings about it, if I process them in a healthy way, are going to be even more temporary.
Yep.
So I can extract what is the lesson here that I'm supposed to learn. And then implement that lesson, whether it's working on my own life or passing it on to someone else. By having that mindset, you're detaching yourself from your own pain that could result from that, your own suffering. So that's what it means. It reminds me of actually a story of a Taoist farmer. And the farmer, one day he had a horse, like a plow horse, and the horse ran away. So the townspeople came by, were just like, oh, that's so terrible. Your horse ran away. And he's like, well, don't say it's, you know, it's like, it's bad. It's like, well, don't say good. Don't say bad. Just say my horse ran away. So that was detachment. And people are just like, what is with this guy? Well, in the story, the next day, the horse comes back and brings along some wild horses with it. And then the townspeople are like, oh, you lucky dog. You know, that's so good. He's like, well, don't say good. Don't say bad. Just simply say, my horse came back with a bunch of other horses. So, and you know, and it continues from there with all these events. So he's not like this stone cold person, but the idea is he understands the ebb and flow of life.
Mm, yeah. And it's really just seeing things from that outer perspective of, instead of attaching all the emotion to what's happened, it's just what it is, you know? It's so fascinating. That could be a whole podcast in itself.
Yeah. Right?
Now, Nate, you know, with all you've been through, what would you say has been your biggest challenge, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, that's a really good question. The biggest challenge for me was because I earlier in life, because I had gotten so into self-help, and because I had really failed with it, I had failed with it so much, the biggest challenge was it really shut down my childlike attitude of exploration. And I became very bitter and became very jaded. So the biggest challenge for me was how do I open myself to when there is a genuinely healthy lesson to come along in life? Because I think we all go through that when we've encountered enough pain, and we've been hurt so much that we're like, we're like a dog that had a bad owner, and the dog is going to snarl even if you try and reach out and help it. And I think that could be one of the, that was my biggest challenge, because it was self-perpetuating. And it was keeping me locked down, and it was keeping me in a really harmful, hurtful place, and making myself my own worst enemy, even when there was a world of opportunity around me. I was blind to it. I made myself blind to it. So that was definitely my biggest challenge. And the way I got out of it was actually by not trying to solve that directly. I've had this come up multiple times in my life. More recently, actually, I was working with a therapist, and I was working with him because I wanted to get married, or at least I wanted to meet the woman of my dreams, you know, and I did get married. Spoiler alert.
Congratulations.
thank you. So he recognized that if we wanted to face my challenges in like connecting with other people, we couldn't face them head on. So instead, he started asking me about my parents, and we started working on how I could communicate with my parents. So it was totally indirect, but as a result, he was able to sneak around all my self-imposed blocks to succeeding. And as a result, actually, I was able to meet the lovely lady who would become my wife. So it's, since you asked me my greatest challenge, I figure I'd kind of riff a bit about how I overcame that. And the idea is that you have to, if you have a lot of, walls up around something, you really have to get, you can't go through them. You have to start working on other parts of your life, and that will allow your walls to come down.
I couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. You know, most people who knew me about 2-3 years ago, I was a very angry, unapproachable person. And people who see me now, they go, I could never imagine you that way, ever. And it's like, yeah. So when you do work on all the other stuff, the walls do come down. So it's never as obvious as we think it is either. So as you stated there. Now, Nate, I got to ask you this one. Can you define for me what ethical means to you?
Sure. And I've been giving this a lot of thought. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine just yesterday. Well, if we go back in time, it was normal for people to live together in intimate communities. Everyone knew each other. And we had marketplaces. The idea that we are able to transact with each other and do business with each other without ever seeing each other, communicate with each other, is new. It's actually like, I mean, we all grew up with it, but in the scale of the existence of human beings, it is actually really new. It's actually really weird. So for me, the reason I say all that is because for me, ethics comes from the idea that you're conducting yourself in a way where everyone to you is that person that could be sitting across from you at a campfire. Every person that you do business with is someone that you could be interacting with daily for the next few decades. And if your conduct can't live up to that, then it's not guaranteed, I guess, but there's probably an almost certain chance that you're not behaving ethically. And I think similar to that is Warren Buffett's definition. He said a lot better than me. He's just like, if your behavior were going to be reported on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow, would you be cool with that? So it's like, okay, that's a lot better, but I figured I'd weave my way into that.
That's what we call here in Queensland. We call it the Courier Mail test. That's the biggest paper here in Queensland. And if you end up on the front page of that, would you be happy with it? Probably not. Yeah. It's a very good way to look at it. So what are your future plans, Nate? What are you working on at the moment?
Book number two.
Book number two.
and I'm just trudging through the first draft. So, you know, everyone can please send their prayers to me. It's just like, first drafts are just, you know, you just got to be like, all right, I'll edit it later. But, you know, honestly, well, that is what I'm doing right now. But in terms of like big picture, I love writing. So I'm going to be publishing more books. And I hope to have more awesome conversations about all the trials I went through and all the stuff I learned to help people avoid the worst of it.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, a burden shared is a burden halved, isn't it? So the more we can share your story, perhaps others will get that breakthrough that they need too.
I've never heard that before. That's really cool. A burden shared is a burden halved. I love it.
I'm full of them.
That's cool. That's super cool.
Now, Nate, if people want to find out more about you and find out what you do or even get your book, where can they go?
They go to the website, thestandingmeditation.com. And right as of now, that just goes right to the book's page on Amazon. And, you know, I wrote that with the intention of like just starting from zero. Well, like someone could just like, it could flop open in front of them. It's like, all right, what's going on here?
Yeah.
The book will take them all the way through. So I that is the absolute best place to start.
Awesome. Now I got the last big question for you. You ready?
Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
What's the change you'd like to see in the world and how can we bring it to life?
Ooh, that's really good. That is a really good one. The change I would like to see in the world, you know, here's what it is. I believe, you know, people are inherently, they're inherently creative. They're inherently, they have the right to thrive. And that's a right just bestowed by our eternal souls. It's not a right bestowed by another human being. So I would love to see a change where everyone has equal opportunity to do so. They have equal opportunity to education and the tools to access it. And they have an equal opportunity to be not only to be able to consume in terms of consume knowledge, but equal opportunity to be able to deliver that knowledge. So I think the best thing we can do is have more conversations like this where we're able to spread the word about entrepreneurship and how we can and how to facilitate being a business owner, whether it's owning a company or just being like a solopreneur. Because I think the more we do that, it's like spreading sunshine throughout the world. And sunshine is the best. I love the phrase, sunshine is the best disinfectant.
Mm.
So I think off the top of my head, that's what I would like to see most.
Wow. That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Nate, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the Ethical Evolution. I have loved every minute. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I was honored to be here.
Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution podcast. If you're an ethical business owner, change maker, or holistic healer who's determined to make a change in the world and you need support to spread your message, visit ethicalchangeagency.com to collaborate.